Welcome to Woven in the Body, a podcast dedicated to unlocking the stories held within our bodies and awakening a new paradigm of consciousness. I'm your host, Christiana Dykman, a therapist, spiritualist, mother, wife, and an Aries passionate about shifting humanity's perception of who we truly are and what we're capable of achieving. To explore the full range of our offerings, including classes, retreats, and events, visit us at www.theflowerofliffoundation.com. Don't miss out on our upcoming events and bonus content. Sign up for our newsletter on our website. Now, let's dive into today's episode.
Hi. So welcome back. This is awesome that we're here again. In this episode, we're going to expand on what we've been talking about this entire time, which is our inner child journey, and turn our attention toward neurodivergence, particularly ADD, autism, and sensory processing differences. So if anyone who hasn't listened before, this is Emily, and I'm Christiana.
Hi.
Hey, Emily.
Hi.
We're going to skip over our bios because you can easily check us out on our website, theflowerofliffoundation.com, on the About page. Emily is a guest host with me, and she comes frequently on to this podcast. You run your own business, Rebel Shift Childhood, in Arizona. And I'm so pleased that you're here and really excited about this new topic that we're going to be opening up, because we're going to be addressing something that is very close to our hearts, simply because you and I have both experienced neurodivergence, or at least what is now called neurodivergence, because this is something you and I went through in our childhoods that didn't have a name. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. We have better language now to talk about it.
We do. And we especially are going to focus on how that this isn't a problem to be solved, but more as we want you to shift your perception to really reflect on this as an emerging intelligence. So together, Emily and I we explore in this how children may be deeply attuned to the quantum field, perceiving subtle energies, even ancestral trauma, all these unspoken emotional currents that are in the conscious collective right now, and including environmental dissonance that most adults, all of us really, have learned to tune out, because it's really such the baseline of our functioning that we don't even, it's so ingrained in our autonomic nervous system that we cannot see it. So we're hoping to take you out of the matrix for a bit and give you a different lens to view this neurodivergence issue through. And before we share our personal stories as both mothers and practitioners of navigating these diagnoses and how they've led us to a more expansive view of human development, we're going to try to normalize what is actually happening with these children. And we believe that they are here to help us evolve. And we say they, but you and I too. You and I are here to help us evolve. So this episode really offers a new framework for understanding neurodivergence as part of a larger planetary shift, one that calls us to attune to expanded perception, really energetic coherence, and a new language of connection. So maybe, Emily, do you want to take us through maybe a grounding breath moment here?
Oh, sure. Okay, yeah. So before we begin, we'll just invite you to center yourself wherever you are. Maybe have a seat or lie down if you can, and take a deep breath in through your nose, out through your mouth. I like to do it 6 seconds in through the nose and coherent out through the mouth, same rhythm. Just really tuning into the feels in your body, noticing your toes, and perhaps scanning all the way up your legs, lower back, trunk, arms, hands, heart, throat, face, head. And if you feel like it, breathing in again, and out through the mouth. Notice the space around you, perhaps orient to where you are. can do that just in your feels with your eyes closed, or if your eyes are open, you could notice just your surroundings. You're inside, like I am, my office, or outside, Christiana is today in nature. And take a moment to connect with your inner parts, anything that's coming to mind, or see if you can notice any tension anywhere in your body. If you do, go ahead and put your hand near that area or on that area. You can do some more breathing into that area and see if you have any awareness of any wounds or any inner children that are hanging out today, and see if you can have a little dialogue with them or notice that they're here with you. If they're not, that's okay too. And maybe you're not sure how to map any of those current woundings to older versions of yourself or younger versions of yourself, depending on how you view that. But we would like to invite them to be part of this podcast today. And this podcast isn't about fixing children. It's about reclaiming our ability to listen and to be present and attune. And all the messages and behave all the behaviors we see in kids are messages, sensations as guidance, and silence as wisdom. So what if children are being labeled as disordered or actually tuned into a wider spectrum of intelligence, one that our current systems simply can't yet measure? Christiana, will you jump into this next part?
Yeah, sure. And thank you for that, for the grounding. I feel a little bit slower. I always get hyped up in the beginning. So I just want to invite people to loosen the lens of diagnosis for a moment. And again, like Emily said, open to this wider view, one that sees beyond labels and really into the energetic reality that all children are responding to, and all humans. In scientific language, we call this neuroception, right? So I invite you to consider a metaphor. This really helps give us a little bit of an image, especially when we're dealing in the energetic realms and the invisible field, that this metaphor I'm going to give us is it's not just for children who've been diagnosed with autism or ADD or some sort of behavioral adaptive strategy, but for all children really born into this time of great intensity and transformation and really like industrial revolution, technology advancements, all of this. So just invite you to close your eyes unless you're driving a car and just imagine that you're noticing a person in front of you or just conjuring up a child and imagine them as a soul, and that this soul is a finely tuned harp, like the musical instrument harp, and they're placed in the middle of a battlefield. I know you probably weren't expecting that word, but this harp is delicate and resonant, and it's really it's a miraculous instrument that's built to respond to the slightest touch. It's designed to vibrate in harmony with its surroundings. But instead of being in a concert hall where most of us encounter harps, it is surrounded by discordant noise, explosions, shouting, harsh rhythms that really jar its strings into chaotic vibration. So the pure tones become strained or even reactive, or in some cases, muted. Not because the harp is broken, but because the environment around the harp that's working with the strings and the wood is dissonant. So, in the same way, what Emily and I are trying to explain or illustrate is that children today, especially those who are attuned to higher frequencies, like the children that are coming in, because of evolution, because our brains have been in a more advanced electromagnetic field, like our Earth is more electrified than ever, right? Because of satellites, because of radiation, because of Wi-Fi, whatever, you name it. So our brains have been exposed to these higher frequencies. And therefore, it's getting stimulated in a way that has never before happened. So these neural networks, call our brains and our nervous system, are programming our organs. And they're coding behaviors that are not inherently disordered, but they are simply responding to the field that they're enmeshed in. And in a large scale, this field is incoherent because we have taken very little time or technology to actually acknowledge that there is invisible electromagnetic fields all around us and that our body is an electromagnetic field. So therefore, we haven't taken measures to bring that energy into coherence. So therefore, we have a bombardment of overstimulating, misaligned fields of energy that are surrounding all of us. And part of that's included is artificial lights, emotional suppression, because emotions have frequency, they have energy. We have fragmented attention, right? Because there's so many, like, just think of like little short videos or bursts of information that are coming at you versus a stream or a steady or a consistent amount of information. We also have environmental toxins. We have processed synthetic foods and a society that's really unplugged from nature because nature actually has its own rhythm that goes in accordance with day, night, seasons. And we have overruled those rhythms because of technology and the pace of lifestyle that we live. So these symptoms that we are labeling children with now are really what we're proposing to be intelligent adaptations. And these adaptations are what they all adaptations are designed to do, which is to self-regulate this body, this machine that we run. And they're trying to self-regulate in a field that isn't vibrating at the natural frequency of the human body. Did that make sense, Em?
Yeah. There's so many different aspects to cover inside of these things.
Yes.
So, with the harp battlefield metaphor in mind, neurodivergent folks can be reframed not as disordered or even suffering from a deficit, but as a heightened form of sensitivity or coherence that clashes with the dissonant environment. My umbrella term for neurodivergent folks is sensitive in general. I like to identify, okay, we've got some sensitivities here, and then what kind of sensitive is it? Because those of us that are neurodivergent, all of our senses are heightened. And we notice energies and environments in different ways. We process these things in different ways. And like you've heard me say before, we're a combo of our genes or our DNA, our environment, and our soul or personality, right? And some of us come through with more sensitivities. Our nervous systems do exactly what they're supposed to do when they perceive threat or the need for protection or the need for regulation, as you said. So honestly, Christiana, we might need to do part two and beyond of this conversation because there is so much to cover, especially because it's relatively new to even have language like neurodivergent. We did not have this language not so long ago. And as a person that was diagnosed as a kid, we certainly didn't have this language. And honestly, for me, being able to access this language now is really helpful because there's so much shame within the realm of there's something wrong with you, right? There's a deficit. There's this big book of all these disorders. Let's find you in it. And
Yes.
then forever, the therapies around it were you need to try harder and do better instead of really honoring the differences, right? And working to understand so much has changed. It's really exciting. And the conversations we have about co-regulation and the parasympathetic nervous system, gosh, it's really helpful in the world of neurodivergent conversation. So let's take a few minutes to reframe neurodivergent conceptually, energetically, and even biologically. So neurodivergence is not a dysfunction. It's a coherence in the dis in a disharmonious field. Neurodivergent individuals, those with autism, ADHD, sensory sensitivities, and other disorders aren't broken. They're highly attuned instruments picking up subtle and multidimensional frequencies. In a world that normalizes energetic and emotional noise, their seeming misalignment is actually a natural response to incoherence. And our nervous systems are doing exactly what they're supposed to do, like I said. So we're not a problem to fix. We tend to absorb the feelings of others and the energies around us, and many of us need help and support to navigate that. And that's a personal statement for me. I feel like until I got into this work and my, I feel like it's my life's work, but really in my mid-30s, I didn't understand the kinds of support that I needed and what was lacking for so much of my life.
What do you want to say for those out there who are really struggling with somebody who has autism in their home and they have so many special needs caretakers, and you're wondering, like, how are these people ever going to be able to live on their own?
And it is true that some folks are not able to live on their own or that they do need certain kinds of physical supports, or there's so many different types of neurodivergent folks out there and overlapping behaviors and things. I would say if we're talking about ASD 1 or ADHD or things that are, no matter what, there's a need for more information and supports that is going to be exhausting for most parents and caregivers and teachers. It's like learning a different language. But I would say that's in line with all the things we talk about, right? So if we're even
Exactly.
gearing this conversation towards neurotypicals, it's like we're asking you to do some heavy lifting. And I think one of the things that gets lost in the sauce inside of that conversation is that it's not a shift towards like perfection and making sure everything's tied up with a bow. It's just a It's about attunement. It's about really working on our presence on a as a lifestyle on the daily, and to be asking questions that are holistic and supportive to the whole person. And it's not easy, absolutely. And if we're talking about autism 2 or autism 3 or co-occurring things going on, yeah, we all can only do so much, and there's funding and there's insurance and there's the right kinds of practitioners. This is an ongoing deal, and it's tough. There's a lot of barriers for people, and I think
Yes, and I'm glad I
that
pushed you forward a little. 'Cause
yeah.
I can just tell somebody, feel somebody listening into this and want to be on that edge. What are we going to do? What are we going to do to fix it? And that's the answer you and I have been saying all along. This is a global wide paradigm shift that we're talking about. And the education that we are offering, certainly we have colleagues around the world who are on the same bandwagon, but our numbers are small compared to the mainstream. And this is this type of knowledge that we're talking about and education about how to work our bodies, how to work our soul, how to work our emotions. Like these things are not being taught. That's
That's
why
right.
we're in the situation that we're in.
And the intersectionality between working with the medical community, right? Like I'll refer people out to get full neuropsych testing pretty frequently. And I work with a couple folks in town here in Southern Arizona that I really trust to do a really good job hitting all the marks. And then once we have that very clinical diagnoses, I like to go through it and make sense of the recommendations and push into all the things you and I talk about once we have that baseline of the medical. Because a lot of times people will come to me and they'll say, oh, I've got anxiety, or my kid has anxiety. And we spend some time together, and I'm like, this is autism. Let's get you a neuropsych testing so we can really get everything on the table so that we know what we're working with. Because if we're working with a PDA or ODD, autistic or ADHD kid, the way that we navigate those behaviors is going to be a bit different than how we navigate someone that has misophonia or dyslexia. So it's like the
Totally.
approach
It's the key.
changes,
Yeah, you have to have a
and it's
key. Fits
but
the
first we
lock.
need attunement, right? We need
Yeah.
attunement, we need presence, and we need a new lens to look through.
Right.
And then we need all the good people to come together so that we can provide a robust support
So good.
system.
This is where it's really good. Okay, so you went over our kind of definition of neurodivergence. So let's go over the definition of the official Western medicine version of neurodivergence. Does that sound
Okay,
good?
so
Just so we
yeah,
can hash that out.
the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, or the DSM-5, which gets updated only like 10 or 15 years or something ridiculous. It's been widely adopted as in neurodiversity discourse to refer to individuals who neurologically, developmentally, and function differently than what is typical or neurotypical. The
Okay.
clinical neurodivergent conditions include autism spectrum disorder, ADHD, PTSD, CPTSD, dissociative disorders, eating disorders, bipolar, schizophrenia, tic disorders, dyslexia, Tourette's, OCD, learning disabilities. There's a lot going on
Yeah.
here. So it's expanding our understanding. And every time the DSM gets updated, these things change, but sometimes they lack too in terms of like actual lived experience. And it still has this very, it feels very clinical in terms of, ooh, look at this list of all these things that are wrong with you, rather than, oh, here's some like differences in how this person moves and navigates the world. Anyway. Western medicine typically defines these conditions based on observable or perceived impairments in areas such as executive functioning, social communication, sensory processing, emotional regulation, and academic or occupational performance. And these conditions are often framed as neurological or developmental disorders or disabilities, each with a specific diagnostic criteria that reflects deficits and impairments and problems. There's something wrong with you. And I'll tell you, Christiana, I was diagnosed learning disabled when
Okay.
I was 14, and I did not ever admit that out loud until about 6 years ago, 7 years ago.
Wow.
And I'm in my mid-40s. Like I was close to 40 before I said it out loud because it was such a dirty word. And I don't think most people don't think I'm disabled.
Right.
I don't look disabled. And then if they hear that word, I think it gives them pause. What does that mean? It's so general. And for years and years, what I made sense of is that my working memory works different than the typical version. But I've read so many reports too that there's more neurodivergent folks out there than neurotypical. It's like this like fantasy, this neurotypical idea, right? Or that it's one or the other. Like it's really confusing for folks. I
It
really
is
wish we had
confusing.
better language too to describe these things. Sometimes I'll read the clinical language and I'll sub out the language. Like even you said neuroception, which we'll talk about more, but in the clinical language around neuroception, it says deficit in the clinical language that neurodivergent folks have neuroception
Deficit.
deficit or is faulty neuroception, meaning it's not accurate. And I think it's really important to say that when we talk, and we'll talk more about neuroception in a second, but it's really more from my perspective in working with hundreds and hundreds of people, mostly neurodivergent folks, is that it's really either we might overreact to stimuli, underreact to stimuli, or crave stimuli. And just to give an example, sometimes people will tell me, like, oh, my kid lies all the time, or something like that. And so I'll start working with the kid. And can I understand, okay, here's the drama that the parent was talking about, or here's the lying that they were talking about? More often than not, that behavior might be perceived as exaggerated, but it's not completely made up. The kid is actually picking up on something related to what they were talking about that was called lying, but that there's some truth to it, or there's some energetic response that is actually accurate, more
Oh
often
yeah.
than not.
That's
That's
why
my
makes
experience.
you and I's jobs very interesting, because once
Yeah.
you start digging into the personal narrative of the family field, which we talk about this all the time with the inner child
Yeah.
journey, you are a hitchhiker on your
Yeah.
relative's autonomic nervous systems, and you're a hitchhiker on the field. Like, your DNA is resonating information at a quantum level that spans time. And there's so much information in the field. So if somebody picks up one thing and you're completely on a different frequency or a radio channel, you're kind of like, you're lying. What the fuck is
Right.
wrong with you? And
Right.
they're like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Why
Yeah.
can't you hear? It's a miscommunication. It's,
Yeah.
and
And
again, a
sometimes I'll say,
non-attunement.
yeah, or kids that exaggerate too, like a lot of my
Yeah.
ADHDers or ADHDers will exaggerate. I was certainly one of those kids too. And sometimes I interpret that as a wish. So sometimes I'll help parents come to understand that their child is speaking in wishes.
That's
Right.
really interesting, because
Keep that in
I
your back
never.
pocket. Test this theory, Christiana, because it's accurate a lot, right? The kid
Yeah.
might be like, oh yeah, I every day I go to skateboarding practice. And the parents are like, no, they don't go to skateboarding practice. They've never skateboarded in their life. See, they're just a compulsive liar. And so then I'm like listening to this kid, oh yeah, skateboard, and I got this teacher and we do all these tricks and I flip over on my skateboard. It's a wish. It's a dream. It's a fantasy. It's a sensation. It's a vibration.
I love that you say sensation vibration, because on the flip side of that, I got obsessed with studying ADHD in my college years when I was going through pre-med at UVA. And I worked in the behavioral medicine department, was a ghostwriter. And it was fascinating to me to read myself on a page. I was like, oh my God, because I had this hyperactive, my mind was just always on, but I live in a muted world. Like, boring. And so nobody wanted to talk about the things that were just like lighting up my brain. Like, brr, I still live in that world. Hey, I'm looking around right now. Like, I'm at the pool. There's nobody here that I would talk to about any of the things that light me up, because that is considered weird and over the
Oh yeah,
top. And like,
totally.
people who don't want to talk about their emotions are like, what's the deeper meaning of life? And so what did I do to dial down that like schism? This is where addiction comes in, right? Because you were talking about that craving, like how that sensitivity, it's like we live in these energetic bodies that are just absolutely a miracle. And we're supposed to be doing things 1,000 times more than we are right now. And we're like walking around like dead people, unawake. When you hear this word, like the woke people, it's like this like schism that's happening. But I had to numb myself, because the pain of being in that kind of environment, it's awful. So you've got two spectrums, like where you can go like over the top, and then you have this imagination that's working. But then all of a sudden, the quiet of night or whatever, when that kicks in, and you're like, damn, that imagination isn't like actually happening. And I don't have anybody that's helping me make those things come true. It's catastrophic. So now we're like into the
Absolutely.
desperation, right? And this like
Yes.
lonely souls. And they say like
Yes.
the biggest thing that afflicts people right now is loneliness. Hello. Okay, so before we like go, let's dial it back so we can share now this version, because you've given the official like westernized version. Let's think about it as a holistic, trauma-informed, energetic definition, right? So let's take a step. I would like to propose that neurodivergence is the expression of a nervous system attempting to maintain inner harmony in an extremely fragmented, overstimulating, and energetically misaligned field. And that's why we see these fluctuations from the person, like in the moment, like I said, going over the top, and then the contraction, right? And you can see it all over the spectrum because each person has a unique blueprint that they're like expressing through. So this is why we have this bell curve, or this like broad range of phenotypes, right? So rather than seeing the behaviors of, let's say, zoning out or hyper focus or overwhelm as problems, they can be interpreted as adaptive regulation strategies, okay, in response to chaotic energy inputs, or signals of internal dissonance caused by external incoherence. Three, you can have expressions of high electromagnetic sensitivity or expanded perception, where the individual is processing not only what's seen or heard, but what they're feeling, like inside, like you said, what'd you say? The vibration, the sensation.
The
They're like,
sensation vibration.
yeah, they're like seeing a wider spectrum of visible light. So this is like pretty cool. Maybe you can now you can package this into a biological energetic lens for us in
So from the
no
perspective
small
of
task.
neurodivergent individuals or biofield sensitive, their morphogenetic field is responding to environmental EMFs and social signals and unseen dynamics. I just wanted to say something too about that, but you go first.
I just want to give people like tangible, because that's like a lot of like mumbo jumbo big words. And those for listening, they're like, morphogenetic, what are you talking about? It means that it shapes how we actually posture ourselves, literally, like how the body forms. So let me give a tangible example. Let's consider ultrasounds. They work by sending high frequency sound waves into the amniotic fluid, which travel more rapidly in water than in air. This creates a vibratory environment that the fetus can sense, and some babies respond with noticeable movement, which might not always be due to excitement, but to the sensory impact of the sound energy. While ultrasounds are an important medical tool, we don't always consider how repeated exposure might affect the developing sensory and vestibular systems, especially in those who are more sensitive. And in the language of developmental biology, you could say this is part of how the body's formative patterns or its morphogenesis interact with the environment.
So
Yeah.
that's just one example of a morphogenetic field. Yes, thank you. So another example through that lens is the neurology that isn't defective. It's designed for non-linear attunement. So rather than following conventional step-by-step cognitive processing, we neurodivergents tend to often excel in pattern recognition, rhythmic and sensory perception, emotional honesty, visual spatial intelligence, and we're tuned differently to frequency, one that is perceives the world not as linear and logic, but whole pulses and felt truths, so to speak. And I will say There's so many, no neurodivergent person looks just like another neurodivergent person too. That's the other thing, right? We're all different. We have different sensitivities and different quirks and personalities and experiences and blueprints and genes and all the things, right? But we do see differences. It can be complex to describe these things, right? Because what is neuronormative, right? What is neurotypical? Like, what is that? I think a lot of it is culturally, it's an expectation, right? And an illusion inside of that too, right? So I like to encourage people to identify their own quirks, but there's so much negativity around differences in our culture, especially Western culture too, right? It's, oh, that's weird, or that's a problem, or it gets complicated in there. But one of the things that came up for me that I wanted to say just about myself is the rhythmic and sensory perception aspect. And one of the things, as somebody that has misophonia, is that like I'm sensitive to sound and startle really easily, but I also like totally stim out on music, especially if it's something that I like. And I read this article a few years ago that was saying that some folks with misophonia have a different relationship with music than neurotypicals. And I realized that was definitely me. Like, it's almost like having a relationship with the music in a different way. I didn't ever realize that other people didn't do that, right? Some people just don't like music, but there's certain kinds of music that I like have a full body reaction to, right? Or I don't feel so alone if I have the music on. Like, I feel like I have a friend with me. And what I came to understand is that not everybody feels that way. And it's not just a difference in, oh, I like this kind of music and you don't. It's more a full body experience, like sensory experience, that I
Yeah.
guess is different.
So let's be because it's our job unwoven in the body to talk about the body and
Right.
how it's intricately weaved together. I really got to go out on a limb here with this non-linear thing because
Yes.
now that we've got like quantum in the play, you have to consider magic. And this is like such a woo-woo topic. And let me break it down so it's really simplified for folks. Kids develop their brains in segments, right? So there for a few years, they're working on their right brain. And then for a few years, they're working on their left brain. And then it goes back and forth. And then there's this whole thing that happens after puberty where you're supposed to combine the brain. When we talk about non-linear, if you listen to the conversations that a child will have with you about what they see in nature, you can really open up your eyes to see that they are not perceiving the world in the way we are. We already know they're in like delta brain waves when they're very young. They're in alpha theta, which means they're in deep meditative states. As a child, like all the way up to the age of seven. So their brains are laid open and they're seeing and perceiving things that adults have learned to shut down because of shaming, patriarchal paradigms, and the way that we teach children. So they can hear voices that aren't even voices like we think of. Have you ever heard of the music of the spheres? You can hear planetary movement, you can hear sound from the sun, the rays that come from our sun. It has a tone to it. It has a sound. It awakens birds in the morning. And then birds, when they see the rays, like they start singing their song, which then vibrates at the plant level. So the plants like open their somat like their stomata, their little breathing pores. So there's all this vibration that we're like not even perceiving. A kid is hearing all in that realm. In the vibe of the laws of nature, in the rhythm. And we spend the better half of their lives teaching them to shut it down. So, this is like when we're talking about this neurology that isn't defective, we're talking about nonlinear attunement. This is what we're born with. And this is what in this world we teach people to shut down because we want them to be in a linear left brain logical attunement. So for some kids that are coming in now, like that's a major clash. They don't want to shut that down because that's a magical world. And they're like, remember, it's like the battlefield, the harp, which what side do you want to be on? Do you want to be in harmonic resonance that's got magic going on, or do you want to be in this like black or white world? So back to this biological energetic lens that we're trying to paint for people, what we're also trying to say is that gut brain axis dysregulation is a signal of systemic incoherence. So all these people that have food insensitivities, allergies, this and that, it's a sign. They're telling us that there's something out of sync with their internal environment and their external environment. And children who exhibit this neurodivergent traits, they often experience significant gut brain axis dysregulation, not as a defect, but again, as a biological clue that their inner ecosystem is out of resonance. So, from the perspective of natural law, the human body is designed to thrive in harmony with living biointelligent inputs. So, clean water. And people are like, who, water? Like, my water is clean. Are you kidding me? Your water is dead. Your water is dead because it is chemicalized. Oftentimes it has fluoride, which is a pollutant, by the way. Chlorine, fluoride, all these pollutants to the pineal gland, which is the first gland in your body that gets you in a regulated state with the circadian rhythm, right? So you have kids that have like irregular sleep problems. This is where it comes from, folks, because there's all kinds of things that are jacking up the internal system of natural law. And like water, living water, we now know, like Dr. Emoto, the water experiments, since that guy published his books a few decades ago, the research that's out there about living water, okay, sourcing water from springs, for instance, how the energy field around that water versus water that we normally, as most humans, put in our body, it's incredibly different because water is our main medium that our body is enmeshed in. So when you put in water that has a high vibration, high coherent field, it's bathing your body with that. But we're far from that. And of course, unadulterated whole foods. How difficult is it to source foods that haven't been chemically manipulated, right? Or processed? And where are these foods getting sourced from? Are they coming from mineral-rich soil? Are they coming from depleted dead soil that has been fertilized and then sprayed with insecticides? So it's like this rhythm that we're talking about of eating also aligns with natural or nature cycles. Like, for instance, we want kids to eat a big breakfast in the morning. We want them to break their fast. That's not actually when our body is most attuned to processing food. In fact, we should eat very little in the morning, do more energetic exercises that are waking the body up and cultivating this photon energy that we're capable of producing. And then by like midday, we're supposed to have a big meal when the sun is at its biggest. That's like when our metabolism is supposed to be really geared up. Like our gut is our metabolizer. It's our engine that combusts and ferments food, and it produces energy just like the sun. Oftentimes, we've got kids who are in school at lunchtime, and what are they eating for lunch? Chicken nuggets. The process can have you ever looked at a school lunch? Ooh, do you remember the chicken patties that you'd have to eat? And like the vegetables that would be like these nuked out vegetables? It's wild. It's really interesting to think about. So let's think about that also at nighttime. We're supposed to be winding down what we eat, but a lot of people eat their biggest meals then. So nature cycles with how we eat. We don't even follow the way that the energy flows in the daytime. We're like highest energy output, middle of the day, early afternoon, and then nighttime, waning the energy down, letting kids naturally come into a like softer rhythm. So today's children like inherit these epigenetic imprints and microbiomes from previous generations that have been raised on diets far removed from this natural order. And it's like foods that we have that are high in sugar, with processed grains, synthetic additives, they're void of living enzymes or probiotic life. And these ancestral nutritional patterns have quietly eroded the biodiversity of the gut flora. And it's compromising the very foundation of when we talk about electromagnetic coherence within the body and how we're in this field dynamics. How can we cultivate that when we're putting dead energy into our bodies? So
Interesting.
that's what I had to say in a
Yeah.
nutshell about gut
Yeah.
biome axis.
Awesome. So let's also consider children as coherence mirrors. So when a
Okay.
child exhibits disruptive behaviors or neurodivergent behaviors, they're often attempting to resist some kind of system, whether it's school or social expectations. Routines, something they view as arbitrary, showing us li limits of a mechanistic model of education, parenting, or medicine, acting as barometers for collective imbalance, mirroring back where coherence has been lost in a larger system. And we want to reframe the perceived negative behavior as a stress response. So, back to what we talk about a lot in general in our class and on this podcast. Behavior equals communication. And when you're dealing with disruptive, negative, confusing, extreme behaviors, it's the same thing. It's we got to reframe right away. This kid is having a stress response. And I'm talking about the kid that punches a hole in the wall. I'm
Yeah.
talking about kids that have the extreme behaviors that look malicious, that look intentional, that look crazy, that look out of balance. It's a stress response. It's a stress response.
Yeah, the kids who
And
go
as,
with like the guns to school and are like shooting kids
yeah.
up, or even kids who are biting, young kids who are like biting
Sure,
kids.
absolutely. And as caring adults, our job is to attune, is to, sure, you might be scared. Your kid punches a hole in the wall. That's going to freak out most people. It would freak me out if my kid started punching holes in walls. I work with those kids, but I'm saying as a parent, yeah.
Yeah.
You're allowed to be startled, scared, worried, flipped out. And we got to remember, no matter what, our job is to get back to attunement. What is the message? What is
Yeah.
happening? Something is out of balance. Something is out of whack. Something is outside of its window of tolerance here. I mean, a lot
Yes.
of times with neurodivergence, I talk a lot about getting stuck in a loop. So it seems to be a theme amongst all of the criteria for neurodivergent folks is that we get stuck in loops. We get stuck in loops. We need help coming out of those loops, right? And of course, our environment plays a big role in how we respond to stress. We need to ask, what is the child's perspective, right? So instead of just judging the behavior, my kid just punched a hole in the wall. I want you to try to get into the child's perspective. What is their perspective on the stress that they are experiencing? Because again, there's so much judgment in our culture. Oh, yeah, he didn't like that I gave him chicken and broccoli for dinner. He wanted chicken nuggets and now he's punching holes in the wall. It's easy to judge that and think, oh, my kid's entitled. My kid's rude. My kid is disrespectful. My kid is unhinged. But instead, it's would that be true? You didn't give your kid a chicken nugget and it spikes their stress response? Yeah, that could be true. That could definitely be true, especially when we're looking at ASD and ADHD behaviors. I see it all the time. It's not the whole, but it's a message and it's important. It's important to value our children's perspective. So, where is the stress coming from becomes our biggest question. And how can I support this perception that my kid has? How can I support the whole here? Where can I give flexibility? Where can I give some support to this child? And are there some skills missing? Are there some regulation skills missing? Probably. Sounds like it. And how can we build those skills? not go by yourself and figure it out, but what can we do to help build the skills we want our kids to have? I feel like I'm still working on regulation skills. I'm 46. I teach it to people. I teach classes with you, Christiana, talk about it on this podcast. And honestly, it's just an ongoing practice, right?
Yeah.
I lose my stuff. I get mad. I say things I don't mean. I behave in ways that I regret later. Not always, but certainly at times. Can we freaking normalize that? Just because kids do it, like, ism is everywhere, right? It's so easy to get down on kids, but adults, we struggle with these things. There's not a perfection here. Back to neuroception really quick, because we've mentioned it before and I want to bring it up again. The neuroception is sensitive in neurodivergent people. Not faulty, I'm throwing that clinical term out. And we tend to, again, over-respond. So neuroception is your scanner. It's in your midbrain. Everybody's got one. We all have a scanner. Are you safe? Are you not safe? Really is what your neuroception is doing. And yeah, our sensitive neuroception is saying, I'm safe or I'm not safe. That could change quickly too. And or we crave that stimulus. We crave that action. And we have differences in our internal data collection center as well. So there's another term too called interoception, which is your body's internal scanner. It tells you, oh, I'm hungry, I'm tired, I'm hot, I'm sick, I'm shy, I'm overwhelmed. And so we do see differences there with neurodivergent people that they're e either unaware of their interoception or they're over responding or they're under responding to their interoception. What's especially interesting to me, Christiana, is that the sensitivities we see in neurodivergent folks and kids are very similar, if not almost identical, to what traumatized brains look like. And of course, we see overlap because if you're neurodivergent in this culture, you're likely going to have trauma also because people don't understand us. But in terms of the epigenetic conversation and what's coming through our DNA, from our ancestors too. I think it's just theory right now. There's not all the research on it. We don't have exact proof, but gosh, it makes so much sense that there is some epigenetic link here and that there is, it's an interesting conversation to think about, look at the intersectionality between trauma, right? And the differences that we see in neuroception in neurodivergent folks, and the difference between the two, because I do see that in my work that a lot of folks don't realize they're neurodivergent. They think that they're traumatized, but really, I think they are, and then vice versa. Some people say, oh, I'm neurodivergent, but really, I see it more as trauma. And then I see both also, too. I like to geek out in there personally in my practice. And it's hard, we can't, there's not a measure really. It's difficult to measure, right? Because if we see behaviors that are consistent with trauma that look just like ADHD, like it's just the practitioner or the diagnostics determination. Oh no, this is ADHD. Oh no, this is PTSD. We're just people, right? We're just people administering these tests.
Dealing with stress, I think, is the universal. Stress has always been with us, right?
Yep.
And stress will always be with us. And how do we regulate our bodies in the environment of stress? All we're talking about right now is becoming aware of what is actually stressing our environments that we can't see, that we have socially accepted because we've lived in a paradigm inside the box, inside the matrix, and we can't see it because we've adjusted to it and put our blinders on energetically
Those
because it
blinders.
was a stress response. Yes. So,
Tunnel vision. Yeah. And we thought that tunnel vision was the right approach.
yeah.
That is not a regulated approach. You are bracing for your life if you are have your horse
Yes.
blinders on. You are holding on so tight. There is so much anxiety if you are living like that. No, it's palpable. You can feel it.
Yep.
Especially if you're a neurodivergent weirdo.
I see it's so, I
Oh.
know maybe this is why we created the Inner Child Journey course, because I kept hearing you say through that, Emily, we've got to regulate our nervous systems. We've got to understand what the emotional language is, which is why we created offerings like the Inner Child Journey, like our mentorship programs, like our family field healing sessions. There's all sorts of services that, we offer here and that we know of other people who are offering that we could refer you to. So it's just if something about this is like you want to know more, check out the website, but also reach out to us. Like we're people, we want to have conversations with you about this and get you set in the right direction, offer you help because we know how much people are drowning in these issues.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I know if you listened to our last episode, Emily, you and I were talking about the inner child, not just as a memory from the past, but as this active part of our nervous system. That's why you invited it to listen in today, right? Is that this inner child is still living within us because we live in a non-linear, remember I was saying non-linear reality. And the things that happen to us, this is why it's woven in our body. The things that happen to us when we were a child, when we were in the womb, even when we were a soul, like thinking about dropping into this field, those things are encoded in our DNA and they're part of our active present moment nervous system. They're living within us. And so,
Yeah.
in order to, we're not saying erase it, we're saying integrate it.
Oh yeah, which takes a long time. I've been doing
Yes, it
this
does.
integration thing for a while and
Yeah.
really trying to separate performance from authenticity, because I feel like
Yes.
those two get intertwined a lot, especially in some of these kind of consciousness sensational conversations. And what does it look like as we age? And what does it look like and feel like to be embodied? And I think that that's such a unique journey, but to make sense and organize like all the action that's coming at us as during our developmental years, right? The channeling we do with our own parents and environment, the genes that we bring with us, and all of the subsequent stress that we experience just as human beings living life, right? And then maybe later, having the tools or understanding to start working through it and to really pick up each piece or each time, each moment of our year of our lives to say, what was this like? What was going on here? Do I want to look at this? Is this fine? Should I put it back? What do I need to do with this? It's certainly a journey, but a journey worth embarking on because embodiment or authenticity really tapping in to your true self or what's really true for you,
Yeah.
I think is so nourishing in a different way. What you were saying earlier about the loneliness, I
Yeah.
realized how lonely I was as a kid, and I didn't really map that until much later. I remember feeling happy with myself as a child. Like I was very daydreamy and I talked to myself a lot and I played pretend a lot and I could get lost in lots of things and I was energetic and excitable and all those. But I remember feeling lonely a lot and how that manifested over time for me in different ways. Also, a peculiar awareness that took a lot of time to make sense of, honestly. I don't think I really came to it until I slowed down, until I burnt myself out.
Yeah. Until you were forced to. That's what happened to me, because this
Exactly.
world codes us to push on, push through until we broke. I know we're approaching or have just gone over the hour mark, and I wanna just encourage people that this conversation is going to continue. It's deep, it's complex, it's epigenetic, it's intergenerational. And so this problem isn't gonna be fixed overnight. It starts like with each of us, like waking up and learning how to work this art of embodiment. And that is what the Flower of Life Foundation is all about. How do we get into our bodies? How do we become more coherent with this natural law, the order of the universe? And I just want to encourage people that we do have a bit of a recipe. that is for the conscious collective. It is for a global movement. And I know that's a big statement, but it's really true. I'm excited about the things that we have to offer. And I did throw out earlier in the call a little bit about sound and, for instance, the field dynamics of the child in the womb and ultrasounds and morphogenetic fields. That's a big topic that a lot of people are probably like confused about or maybe never heard of. And so one of the things I love, like for visuals, is Gaia Television. I love Gaia Television. I can't recommend it enough because it takes a lot of this science, especially this newer science on quantum dynamics, and it puts it into different TV series that you can stream that are like 20 minute, 30 minute long. And one of the series that I love is The Sound of Creation, is a really illuminating exploration of how frequency cymatics, right, and vibrational geometry form the blueprint of reality. Literally, like it maps it from cosmos down to our DNA, and it's very pictorial. So it really helps take the academic piece of it and illustrate it for you in a really simple way. So I really encourage people to check that out. And that we are going to dive deeper into this topic, like we said. But one of the things that we're trying to stress in our models of teaching is that we have these three pillars of coherent healing. And this is what we're going to pack under. There's a sweat bee flying around me. It's hilarious. But we're going to pack this in later episodes. And that is, one, we teach the science of self and co-regulation, because we are big believers that the buck stops here. If we're going to change the world, we have got to take responsibility for the shit that was thrown on our autonomic nervous systems as parents. And it means that we got to do this great work. We got to do this inner work, like you were saying, and not only say, oh, this is a therapy session that I'm going to go to, but this is a lifelong journey. It's a lifestyle of uncovering your nervous system and becoming aware of how it works. So if you can do that, then it's also working with your child or those in your field, because we're designed to regulate with each other. So we teach that. And then the second one we have is the self responsibility for intergenerational trauma, right? Like, just what does that mean? How does that show up? So we go through that. And then the third pillar in our foundation is definitely this developing a spiritual relationship with the unseen world. That's a biggie. There's aligning with the natural rhythms and that support health and coherence. And so many people don't know what that is because we've never been taught it. And it doesn't, unfortunately, come in religious institutions. When I develop spiritual relationship with the unseen world, I'm not talking about let's go to the Catholic Church or any kind of dogmatic thing like that. I am talking about all the things that religion suppressed for thousands and shamed us for. So that's a whole nother box to uncover. And so this conversation is literally just scratching the surface, but it's a beginning. It's a beginning. And that's cool.
It is cool. Can I tell you a activity that I engaged in the other day that really made me get close to a younger version of myself that feels in line with what you're describing? I was born into water. So when I was born in 1979, they were doing the Leboyer method, right? So my mother birthed me and then they put me right into body temperature water. And there's this whole birth story that my mom talks about with it, but I've always been a water girl. I love the water, any kind of water, pools, lakes, oceans. I can tread water for hours. I love to swim. I'm a fish. And in my life, there was a lot of pressure. That's a whole nother story around being a professional swimmer. I did a lot of competition and all of that. And in that process, it burned it out of me. So there was years that I didn't swim because I had some trauma and stress around it. So I've rediscovered water on my own terms, not for sport, not for being fit, just to enjoy. And so recently I went to the gym, which is something I like to do for myself. And it's very hot here in southern Arizona right now. It's over 100 degrees every day. And a friend of mine gave me a key to her pool. And so I took myself to the pool where you are right now. I wish I was there with you, Christiana. And I was by myself at this pool. Nobody was there. And I did backflips and somersaults and handstands in this pool by myself in the middle of the afternoon and just had the most glorious time. And I was laughing at myself because it was almost like I was having this like out of body childlike experience. And I was so pleased with my experience. And it lasted for like, it's been like 10 days since I did this. And I still it's still with me where I'm like, that was like the most joyful, playful, lovely thing.
Yeah, I'm gonna rip this dress off and get in the pool as soon as we get done
Yeah.
with this,
Do
which
some
is like,
backflips, Christiana. Do some
I
backflips.
will. That's so cool. I love it. Check out our, if you feel so inspired, our Inner Child Journey course. It's on the website. It's 8 hours of guided teaching and practice. It helps you learn the language of your emotions, which is a whole language you've probably never been exposed to, and really navigating your nervous system. I love it. And then coming up in August, like on our current events page or our events page, you can see we have an in-person workshop also doing it online. So if some people are not here in my neck of the woods, which is Charlottesville, Virginia, you can join online through the Zoom call. You don't have to be present because we'll walk you through all the things. It's a process of detoxifying and reawakening your master gland, the pineal gland, which really regulates your vitality. It opens up your intuition, like accelerates your dream work for any of those of you who are really into that. And it's just a really way of a great way of tapping into the spiritual realms. And then this fall, we're launching the Alchemy for the Soul, which is like a deep dive into the psycho spiritual somatic map of who we are. So it's a deep dive into inner alchemy and a lot of this reflective work. So check out our events page. There's a lot starting and it's kicking up here, taking it up a notch. I love it. I'm excited.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. Till next time.
Thanks, Christiana. Bye, everyone.